And here's your host, Dr. Tony Bean.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It's great to have you listening to the program. We're beginning hour number two, and we're going to be jam-packed this hour, I'm just telling you. Because I didn't get a whole lot of stuff in the first hour. We talked a lot about the convention. So this is going to be busy. This is Tony Bean, Vice President for Student Life and Christian Worldview at North Greenville University, where Christ makes the difference, and where we are turning out transformational leaders for the church and society. And usually I'd be saying this is my co-host Hannah Miller, but Hannah's on vacation this week with her family and she'll be back on Monday. All right, let's do celebrity birthdays right quick as we get started here in the second hour. If you're having a birthday today, we want to say this to you.
Happy birthday!
Yes, you are a celebrity on your birthday and you share a celebrity birthday with Harriet Beecher Stowe. That's right, the authoress. Is that correct? Authoress? Or is that sexist? Who knows?
Yeah.
Okay, anyway,
she
wrote Uncle Tom's Cabin, which kind of started or sort of encapsulated the anti-slavery movement. Burl Ives was born today in 1909, Mr. Holly Jolly Christmas, and you'll remember him from Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer as the singing snowman. Donald Trump is 72 years old today. We say happy birthday to the President of the United States, Donald J. Trump. George O'Dowd, better known as Boy George, is 57 years. I just find that interesting that Boy George and Donald Trump share a birthday. There probably couldn't be more opposites than those two. Steffi Graf is 49 today. By the way, I'd forgotten how good of a tennis player she was. She won 3 Grand Slam tournaments 5 times.
Mm-hmm.
All right. In other words, she won the Grand Slam. She's the only player, male or female, to have what's known as a Golden Slam, which means she won all 4 of the Grand Slam tournaments and won Olympic gold in the same year.
Wow.
She's the only person that's ever done
wow.
that, male or female. She won each Grand Slam title 4 times.
My goodness.
I mean, she was like number one in the world for 350 something weeks. And
mm-hmm. Now, she wasn't the one that was attacked by the knife.
Oh, no, no.
Guy with the knife,
no, no.
Was it?
Not Steph. I don't think Steffi Graf was
one of them.
Was one. Yeah. I'd have to go back and think about that because I don't remember for sure. Kevin McHale, I think he was one of your favorite players, wasn't he?
From Boston Celtics.
Boston Celtics, yeah.
Minnesota.
Yeah.
Golden Gophers.
Anyway, the Timberwolves, maybe. All right, he was born in 1980. He's 60.
No, he went to college.
1958.
He went to college at Minnesota.
Oh, Minnesota. I got you. He's 60 years old today. So happy birthday to you and all those folks as well. All right. Let's go ahead and talk about the 4th District race since I haven't had a chance to weigh in on that. I want to give you 6 takeaways and from observing this. And I'm going to talk about it in broad political terms, in terms of what, you know, happened and what matters. To me, after looking at the results, and you could actually apply this to the Republican primary statewide, these 6 things matter, at least to the members of the 4th District for sure, but this also applies somewhat to statewide contests that were held this Tuesday. Number 1, money matters. The amount of money that gets spent, it makes a difference. You've got 2 people in a runoff for the 4th District. You've got Lee Bright and you've got William Timmons. Timmons spent, and this is according to sources that I've talked to that say they know how much money went into this thing, over $1 million on this race. And now, Lee Bright, of course, he didn't raise and spend anything like that. So money's not the only thing that matters. So I want to be clear, money's not the only thing, but money matters. It makes a difference how much money that you can pour into a race, how often, and I would say this in addition, how early you get your name out there and how often can you consistently be on television, on radio, your signs, everything out there, interviews, whatever. And William Timmons was able to put in enough money to be consistent, and I think that was a big part of getting him into this runoff. Now, the second thing is something that I think aided Lee Bright. Trump matters. what you say, what you've said, what you think about the presidency of Donald J. Trump matters greatly in South Carolina. If you don't believe that, ask Mark Sanford. Now, Mark Sanford really, by all accounts, should have cruised to the nomination to be the congressman again down in Charleston. He did not. He lost because, I think President Trump's last-minute tweets had a lot to do with that. I mean, basically, Trump came out and said, we'd be better off with Mark Sanford in Argentina. That, he's not been very helpful to me to make America great again. And he, you know, Trump came out and endorsed Sanford's opponent. So, and Sanford lost. So, in the 4th District, you had a lot of attack ads that were being run against the top tier, what I would call the top tier candidates, the top four vote getters. There were a lot of accusations going back and forth. It kind of became a matter of who supports Trump more. Who's got an impeccable record when it comes to supporting Donald Trump? Now, you'd think Epley would have been in there because he was Trump's drum beater and campaign manager and did a whole lot to help Trump in South Carolina. But see, again, you have to put all of these items that I'm talking about together in order to be successful. So Epley basically had Trump. That was his campaign. I'm Donald Trump. I'm Donald Trump in South Carolina. I don't mean that disrespectfully. I'm just saying because of his experience with Trump and because of how he was one of the first ones to come on board and to help Donald Trump. He went to Washington for a while. He was one of the questions he got at one of the last debates, the Greenville Tea Party debate. Was, well, you didn't stay in Washington very long, stayed about 4 or 5 months. How come you went and came home? And his answer was, well, I went to help with the transition team, and once that was done, then I came home. So, he actually served in the Trump administration in some capacity. But that alone was not enough. But if you were anti-Trump, that alone could be enough to get you booted. Mark Sanford had to learn that the hard way. Mark Sanford had a lot going for him in terms of name recognition, approval. I mean, but he went on television and criticized Trump and his trade policies and criticized Trump over Trump's decision to sign this big omnibus bill that spent all this money. And people in South Carolina in the Republican Party are not going to get behind you if you're a vocal, outspoken critic of Donald Trump. And Mark Sanford, you know, when he lost, he said, you know, I've got no regrets. I don't speak in favor of a person. I speak what I think is right, what I think is true, and what I think is best for the people in my district and for the people in South Carolina. I respect that. But he had to know that was going to put him in political peril because we are in a political climate in the Republican Party that is, I want to be done with people that are not supporting President Trump. And I want to know, I want somebody who's going to go to Washington and be angry and be forthright and be, you know, a avid Trump supporter and get in there and help Trump get his agenda across. That's, if you're in the Republican Party in South Carolina and you don't embrace that, you better pack your bags if you're running for office. Because if you can't, if you've expressed reservations with the Trump agenda, if you've been vocal about it for any length of time, you're going to be in trouble. That's going to cause you problems. So money matters. Trump matters. Attack ads matter. The third thing. And then we'll take a break and I have three more. But attack ads matter. People say they don't matter. I don't like them. Nobody likes attack ads, but they make a difference. I mean, you can't say that they don't. And there were the attack ads began about in earnest, about in the 4th District, about 2 weeks before the election. They really, I mean, you got through, you know, as you got into the 1st of June, the attack ads started flying. And they, you know, nobody wants to own them. Nobody wants to own up to them. But, I mean, you had Club for Growth that supported Josh. They came in. They started running attack ads. You had the National Association of Realtors. They supported Hamilton. They came in, and I'm pretty sure that what they spent their money for primarily was attack ads. There could have been some positive ads run in Hamilton's favor. But you those things, Lee Bright, which I'm going to talk about strategy here is in the next segment and why that matters. Well, I'll hold my comments about that till the next segment. But my point about this is nobody likes attack ads, but they make a difference, particularly leading up to the election. It timing has a lot to do with that, and so it does matter when those ads hit, and it does matter how they are presented as to whether or not they're effective. Advertising as a whole makes a difference. You want to know why John Warren? Let's go back to Money Matters for a second. John Warren spent a whole lot of his own money, invested just a ton of his own money to make it into a runoff with Henry McMaster. And so there you go, Money Matters. The message that John Warren is bringing matters. John Warren's support of Trump matters, but you've got a standoff here because you've got Trump openly endorsing McMaster. And so it's going to be interesting how that runoff plays out. You know, there are those who believe that Columbia is a cesspool of corruption and that everybody in it is connected to that corruption no matter what, they're likely going to vote for John Warren. And John Warren, let me say this, John Warren went from zero to 20 to second place mainly because of the strength of his television advertising, which was excellent. Warren's TV ads were persuasive. They presented him in an excellent light, and the attack ads against him just didn't stack up to the quality of the ads that John Warren ran touting who he is and what he would do as governor. So I think that makes a big difference as well. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. I got three more things that matter according to the results of the 4th District congressional race, but also statewide in Republican politics. Stay with us.
And here's your host, Dr. Tony Bean.
All right, welcome back. Thanks for listening to the program today. Hannah will be back on Monday. I'll be back in the morning. Hannah's out on vacation. And once again, thanks to Jim Lee for doing such a good job and standing in for me and Hannah on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of this week while I was out at the convention and Hannah was on vacation. All right. We're talking about six takeaways from the 4th Congressional District that also, I think, could be expanded to the entire state. Number one, money matters. We talked about the amount of money that it was spent. There were several candidates that raised a considerable amount of money, and then several candidates that were able to put money in out of their own pocket because of their ability to do that, and several candidates who received backing from outside sources that spent considerable dollars to try to help them get elected. So those that it just in any campaign, it matters how much money gets spent. Obviously, Trump matters. Mark Sanford found out that Trump mattered supremely to him because when Trump came out against him, it pretty much sealed his fate. He may be done in politics in South Carolina. Of course, how many times have people said that about Mark Sanford? You know, when he got into the big mess with going to Argentina, as Trump says he should go back, all of that, people were predicting that was the end of Mark Sanford. He came back and he won the 18th district, and you know he was so whether or not he can make another comeback after this defeat, in his interview last night on Fox News, he basically said with Martha McCallum, he said never say never, that he could be done. But he's never going to say never, so we'll have to wait and see about that. Trump matters. Attack ads matter. Nobody likes them, but they make a difference. The fourth thing, experience in office in the 4th district apparently matters. Because the top three vote-getters had held statewide office. Lee Bright was a senator from Spartanburg. You've got William Timmons, a senator from Greenville. You've got Dan Hamilton, a House member. So these are apparently the top three had been the rest of the field, if I'm remembering correctly, had not held a statewide office or had been elected to anything before. Josh Kimbrell was elected as Spartanburg County chairman, Republican chairman, but that was just for Spartanburg County. So holding statewide office and having that level of name recognition, at least in the 4th District, mattered. Now, you may say, well, it didn't matter to John Warren. He got into a runoff. Yeah, but name recognition, that's back to what we're talking about. John Warren doesn't have a lot of political experience, but you have to put all of these things together in order to be able to figure out how did these people get where they did. Back to John Warren, money and the effectiveness of his ad campaign.
Yeah, if you don't hold the office, then you've got to use the other things you're talking about advantage.
But for the 4th District, it just played out that the top three vote getters and the runoff is going to be between two senators, one a former senator, one a current senator in the South Carolina Senate. So experience, at least for the 4th District in office, apparently mattered. Timing matters. That's number five. It matters when you do certain things. When do you break out? When do you begin the attack ads? When, if you look at the last debate at the Greenville County Tea Party, now some of the back and forth between the candidates, the top tier, the top four candidates, was it top four or they have six up there? Six.
I think
the top six.
Six.
Yeah, they had six. The top six candidate. Man, I was there. How bad is that? The top six. You had some back and forth get started. Because and the debate kind of, this was an actual debate. When you don't have 12 or 13 people up there, you can have some back and forth between the candidates without it, you know, falling into chaos. And so I think the timing of when the actual back and forth between the candidates, the timing of the attack ads, when they started running, Lee Bright started what I think was an effective ad. It was a negative ad that was run primarily, I think, against Josh, that started on Saturday and ran through the election on Tuesday. But they ran it heavily. So you've got, leading up to this 4th congressional district, and this gets into my sixth matter, which is strategy matters. When you do what you do. Timing matters, but so does strategy. What is it that I say? There was a strategy that was employed that said, I know that there's a lot of undecided voters going into the 4th district primary, so let's put our attack ads, let's put a heavy emphasis on the ads in the last week or the last weekend. Let's really get as much out as we can on the last weekend. I think that was effective because I think a lot of voters in the 4th district, I think a lot of them went to the polls, not really sure on Monday who they're going to vote for, began paying attention probably toward the end of the week before the Tuesday primary, and the uptick of interviews and money spent and amount of attack ads, all part of a strategy to sway undecided voters, I think all of that mattered. I think it made a difference in who ended up in the runoff. And by the way, the runoff is going to be between William Timmons and Lee Bright. Now, at least that's the way it is right now. Today at noon, they're going to decide about provisional ballots. There were a number of provisional ballots that were cast. A lot of, you know, people had a problem voting, and they had to do a paper ballot. So those paper ballots, the validity of those paper ballots will be checked today at noon, and then any ballots, there may be some ballots that are disqualified, but the expectation is, I think, that most of those provisional ballots will be accepted. And then tomorrow, there's going to be a determining factor is going to be in the runoff, is Dan Hamilton. You know, there was only Dan Hamilton and William Timmons both got the same percentage of the vote. They only were separated by a few hundred votes. So according to state law, there has to be a recount. I don't think that's going to make a difference because it's several hundred votes and not, you know, 50 votes or 30 votes or something like that. I doubt that they're going to find that many votes different to change the outcome. But so it's likely going to be Timmons and Bright in the runoff as we go forward. And that's supposed to be 2 weeks from yesterday. I don't know if since they've got to do a recount, if they're going to extend that time or not. I haven't seen anything about that. But if you look at the races across the state, I think you'll conclude that money matters, Trump matters, attack ads matter, experience in office matters, timing matters, and strategy matters. Now, I would put into strategy the message because, you know, when you start talking about strategy and you can't talk about everything as a candidate. I mean, there's so many things that you could emphasize. You've got to pick 1, 2, 3, maybe 4 items that you hit over and over again, that you keep in front of the voter. And so I think message to a large degree matters. John Warren's message, for example, Columbia is corrupt. We need somebody that's willing to stand up to the people in Columbia that have made it corrupt. I'm willing to do that. I think that message got across. I think Lee Bright's message of support for Trump, support for the Trump agenda, I think that mattered and it got the message across. Another thing, let me go back to the attack ads for a minute. Unfortunately, smearing people matters. And there was some of that that took place in the 4th District. I find it terrible that all this stuff was brought up against Josh Kimbrell that had to do with Tristan that never should have been out there. All of that, you know, when a person has, if they can be accused, you can be accused, I can be accused of anything. People can say, and by the way, in an arrest warrant, which apparently was dug up and mailed to a bunch of people over Josh Kimbrell, in an arrest warrant, all these, they throw in the kitchen sink, they charge you, they come up with as many things as they can to try to have something that sticks. Here's what should be significant. None of the stuff that was alleged against Josh Kimbrell stuck legally. There was no evidence. You still have to have evidence to get convicted of something in America. And there was no evidence to convict him of anything. In fact, there wasn't even enough evidence for him to go to trial. They had to throw the whole thing out. And then the family court looked at it and said, you know what? We're censuring your wife. We're giving custody, full custody of your child to you, even though you were accused falsely of molesting that child. And if we can't accept that kind of vindication, then nobody can be vindicated. If you're going to bring that up forever against a person, then what is the standard for vindication? What if somebody accuses you and you're totally vindicated in court, two courts, family court and state court? If that's what happens, do you not have the right to be vindicated at that point? And so all of that was brought up to me was just despicable. And anything brought up against any of the other candidates about their past or things that has been already, you know, dealt with and put away, I think for people that are honorable, that ought to be out of bounds. All right, Jim Lee, welcome. Thank you, sir, for sitting in and welcome to the program.
Thank you for the privilege. It was great to be there. I think I couldn't disagree with any of your analysis there. I thought you hit things. What disappoints me is the two things that probably ought to matter the most weren't mentioned, and that's character and actual ideas, actual policy proposals that you're right. The candidates can't cover everything, but what are some specific meaningful policy proposals rather than just sound bites, and be able to use this as an opportunity to move forward conservative ideas, particularly in the 4th District in the area that we represent. And it's just unfortunate that those two things don't rise to the top of the things that matter.
Well,
it's money, it's negative campaigning, it's incumbency. Unfortunately, incumbency, in my view, as my personal opinion, is not really an indicator of anything unless you've actually done something. Just because you have a voting record, that helps. Okay, that tells you something about the person. But right. Have you been able to be effective? Are you really positioned to be a person who can move into this next office that you want to run for? and be effective. Just because you're a state representative doesn't mean you would be a good congressman. Conversely, just because you're a business person doesn't mean you'd be a good state house representative.
Right.
And it's just so disappointing. And if I could, I wanted to comment, because I think they're related, your discussion about the Baptist Convention and the resolution about immigration and whatnot. I think it's important to point out that the connection between politics here, you're talking about a private entity and their positions,
right,
and support for the law, versus in this context of the 4th District, what policy positions are you going to bring forth that address the law?
Yes.
That are going to be informed, yep, obviously, by your worldview.
Exactly. No, that's a great point, Jim. You know, when you get elected to Congress, you're supposed to go, and the first thing you're supposed to do is uphold the law. And if you don't like the law, then you work to change it. You've got one voice and a voice of what, 435. So you've got to go and try to be a beacon of light for change in things that you don't like or things that you think ought to change. But you've got to first and foremost support the laws that are on the books. So and I agree with you. Jim, policy ideas used to matter. They don't matter right now. And I think that's a detriment to the Republican Party, that we've gotten to a point where specific policy initiatives and strong ideas are being pushed to the side in favor of personality, in the favor of how much you support the president. I mean, I think that's important, but it shouldn't be the determining factor when we're talking about somebody who's going to represent everybody in Congress. So,
yeah,
anyway.
I agree that there ought to be support for the president's agenda, particularly if the president is part of the party you claim to represent. I would assume that your agenda would be common in terms of that. What bothers me is there is such a cult of personality here that there's almost worship for the person rather than the office and the platform that should be represented.
Yeah, I agree.
And you should be able to criticize your leadership if you disagree with them.
You should be able to.
Anti.
Exactly. You should be able to speak your mind without that. You know, Mark Sanford said, look, I agree with 89% of what the president does. And that should count for something. But it is getting to be almost a personality cult. Now, I don't know that we're there yet, but I think there's danger of that. Anyway, thanks a lot, Jim. Appreciate your comments. We got to take a break. Dennis, hang on. I really want to know what you think about Spartanburg, and I'll come back and talk to you about it in 3 minutes. Stay with us.
Here's your host, Dr. Tony Bean.
All right, welcome back to the program. Dennis is on the phone. Go, Dennis. Oh, Dennis. I'm so sorry that we didn't get to talk.
Dennis, had to go to work.
Yeah, he probably had to do something. Dennis, if you can call back, I wish you would. Well, anyway, we're going to be in a runoff, and we'll be talking about the runoff, of course, in the days coming up. And I haven't had a chance to look at it. I was in the air, and is the Attorney General, is Alan Wilson in a runoff?
I think he is.
Because I think the last time I looked, he had 49
right.
point
he
something
very
percent
close,
of the vote.
He's still going to be in a
runoff. But I think he's going to be in a runoff. Mm-hmm. And you know what, folks? Here's the plain truth of it. Anything can happen in a runoff. I mean, because you're down from ever how many candidates you had to two. And things can change. I mean, particularly in the 4th District. I mean, you're going to have, for example, where are Josh Kimbrell and Dan Hamilton and Stephen Brown and Epley? And where are all these supporters, assuming that these are people that are politically engaged and are going to go out and vote in a runoff? They're going to continue to pay attention. Where are they going to go? That's going to make a difference. I mean, if you get, you know, if Timmons gets a bunch of those voters, then he's probably going to win. If Lee Bright gets them, he's going to win.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not going to make a prediction yet. I've got my thoughts already. Mm-hmm. And actually, the people that I've talked to when I've expressed my thoughts, they're like, no, you're wrong. You know, so it's going to be interesting. I'm going to keep my powder dry. Probably until Monday, because first of all, I want to see if there's going to be a recount. I mean, if a recount happens and Hamilton somehow came out in second place, it's going to change what I think about what the eventual outcome is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, in the governor's race, it's wide open. I mean, it really is. Is anybody willing to bet against a guy who went from close to 0% in the polls to coming in second and forcing a runoff with a sitting governor? I mean, John Warren has some appeal, and we'll have to see which way that goes. John Warren was very popular in the upstate. I don't know. I haven't looked to see how well he did in other parts of the state. But, Henry, it'll be interesting to see what happens with the governor's race. Wilson and Atwater, it's going to be Atwater against Wilson. I think Alan Wilson will win. I think they've tried to connect him to corruption in Columbia, and that has not been, I think, successful to the point that people are ready to reject him.
Right.
So far.
Well, if it had, I don't think he'd have wound up at
48%. Yeah, 49. Yeah, when I was looking at him, it was 49.
It's 48 point something now.
Okay,
So
I guess
that's still pretty close.
That was like with 99, out of whatever, 100% of the vote, he was at 49. So I guess he dropped a little bit.
48.65.
Okay.
That's close.
So, and the other races, we'll just, the runoff, but it's just when it gets down to two. Yeah, one of the disappointing things is turnout in the primary. I mean, I think you've got somewhere between 18 and 20% of registered voters, and that was high. That's that's more than people predicted, but you've got 18 to 20% of the registered Republican voters making a decision that's pretty big.
And it'll be less for the runoff.
Oh, yeah. There's no way that many people are going to come back out.
No.
And they're just not going to pay attention.
My guy lost, and I'm not going back out to vote.
Yeah. But I would encourage you, please, if you voted for one of the other guys, go vote. I mean, obviously, was anybody curious about who I was supporting? I doubt it. I mean, I was all for Josh Kimbrell, but I'm going to go vote in this runoff.
Isn't that part of your strategy? Also, you mentioned strategy is having some kind of a base that you can say is going to turn out. I think for Senator Bright, that was, he's connected with the Tea Party.
That's right.
And that's a group of people that they will show up to vote.
And a lot of people say that the Tea Party's, day has passed. I mean, I've been reading stuff about that. Mm-hmm. Forget that. I mean, it's whether they call themselves the Tea Party or not,
right.
People that are upset about taxes, they're upset about the government in Washington, the establishment, the main thing that the Tea Party pushes back against is the Republican establishment. And so that, and I'm telling you, Lee Bright really took aim at that. And that's part of strategy, understanding what the voters are focused on and then tapping into that. And I think Lee did that from the beginning of the campaign. I mean, Lee got outspent. He got out advertised, but he focused in on what a lot of people in the 4th District were concerned about, and that's the Washington establishment. And Lee was very vocal about getting rid of, and he was able to point to his history in the South Carolina Senate as being the guy who said no to a lot of things. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We got to, and then we'll come back and talk to Mrs. J, and we'll also talk to, we have another caller as well. Stay with us.
And here's your host, Dr. Tony Bean.
All right, welcome back. Thanks for listening to the program today. Let's go to the phones. Mrs. J, you're first.
Hey, welcome home.
Well, thank you, ma'am. Appreciate it.
I just wanted to say, my hubby and I do the polls at our precinct down here. And we had more voters than we usually had for a turnout.
Right.
We had quite an increase in the Democratic voters, which we don't usually get, but we got quite a few this time. So people are taking it seriously.
Yeah, I agree, Mrs. J. I just wish more people would take it seriously because, know what?
We had 20%, which was pretty good.
well, yeah, that's what I'm saying, though, 20%. That means 80% of the registered Republican voters didn't bother to make express their views in a primary.
I mean, people would come up and say, I don't know who to vote for, but, you know, we can't say anything to them about that,
right.
You know, by law. Right. We're not supposed to say it, and that's just the right thing. They should have already researched it.
Exactly. Well, if they come up and say that to you in the runoff, hand them my card, will you? I'll send you a bunch of my cards. It's got my phone number.
You do that.
Call this guy, and he'll be
all
glad
right,
to tell you.
Welcome home.
Thanks, Mrs. J. Appreciate it. Carol, you're next.
I just wanted to say that my husband and I, we voted for Josh. And I would like to mention when the runoff comes about, we will not vote for Nimmons. We remember when Nimmons ran against
Timmons, the excellent
record of Senator Fair. His comment was it was a stepping stone to go further. He outspent Senator Fair. Senator Fair had an excellent record, but Nimmons outspent him.
Yeah, Timmons. Starts with a T.
Timmons.
That's okay. That's all right,
better
Carol.
Than that.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, Carol. I appreciate that. Look, I understand a lot of people are going to look at this runoff and think about voting records. They're going to think about comments that were made. And I'm telling you, with social media, when you say something or you put something out there, just remember, anything you say on social media can be dug up and either used in your favor or used against you. That's just where we are. And so you better believe that people are going to be looking at things that Lee Bright has said in the past and that Timmons has said in the past and what their positions are today. And that's going to have a big impact on who they vote for when it comes to the runoff. Gene, thanks for calling.
You know, we mentioned the aspect of a low voter turnout. And I guess we've had other primaries where voter turnout was low, too.
Yeah, well, lower than that. This was actually high for a primary. So,
which is good.
But, well, it's good, but still. I mean, high is 20%.
But not attracting the numbers of people you hope for. And here's a reality. I know I've just gotten scolded by a number of my acquaintances and family down, over here because I told them we're going to have to go out and vote again. And they said, not again, not again. I said, well, yes, we have to do that because the primary is not done.
Absolutely.
Then we have to vote in November. Yes, we have to vote in November because if the Democrats have a majority, I mean, we're going to be swamped. And I think what I'm hearing, and even with myself, is voter fatigue. You know, you understand that, right?
Well, I understand people getting voter fatigue. To me, is linked to when people go do what they're supposed to do, and then the people we vote for don't do what they said they were going to do.
Well, that's an element of it. That's one of many of the other elements.
Yeah, there's a lot of elements.
We're going to look for a new candidate to come in with a fresh face and a rhetoric of I'm going to clean up the corruption. Only I know how to do it. And geez, where did I hear this before? And we feel like we've been suddenly we've elected Benedict Arnold.
Yeah, I know that's and I think that has a lot. People are frustrated, but we better realize that Republicans are facing an energized Democrat Party, even here in South Carolina. I mean, they think the resistance to Donald Trump movement is going to carry them over the top. I think they're wrong. I think the successes of Trump, whether real or perceived, are going to be enough to hold off any kind of Democrat blue wave. I'll be surprised if the blue wave manifests itself. All right, we're not going to have time to get in today. Tomorrow, I promise, we're going to talk about, we'll talk about the IG report because it's coming out today. I was going to talk a little bit about that today, but we ran out of time. Tomorrow, we'll talk about the North Korean summit. I want to weigh in on that. I think the people that are criticizing Trump are way too critical, way too early in the process. But I also think that there's hypocrisy on both sides of this. And I'll point out those things tomorrow. So those are two things for sure that we're going to get to early and often tomorrow because they're big deals and we need to get to them. We'll also report to you tomorrow about the Election Commission's decision about provisional ballots today. That decision will be made today at noon. And then tomorrow we'll also whether there's going to be a recount to determine if it really is going to be Timmons that is in a runoff with Lee Bright or is it going to be Hamilton. It probably is going to be Timmons. I just don't think, even if they recount, and I think they'll have to, I don't think there'll be enough votes changed to make a difference. All right, let's see if there was anything else. Real quick, cut number 9. I want to see if I got time to play this. This is the worship initiative that Sessions is talking about yesterday. Here we go.
Sessions unveiled the Place to Worship initiative, which will in part help the Justice Department fight communities and individuals who attempt to discriminate against churches of all denominations. Sessions says the open expression of religion should be enforced as the Constitution requires.
I think that means something more than just speaking it or thinking it. And we intend to assert that aggressively in the months to come.
While some see the action as attempting to protect religious freedom, civil rights groups say it could open the door for private businesses to discriminate against religions and lifestyles they disagree with. Gernal Scott, Fox News.
Yeah, believe me, that's what everybody, that's what all the progressives are concerned about. They look at that Jack Phillips case, and they're afraid that the Justice Department is going to take that as a springboard to actually protect people's First Amendment rights of expression and their right to worship without interference from the government. Kudos to Jeff Sessions as Attorney General for making that a focus of the Justice Department. See you in the morning.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or iHeartMedia.